Welcome to Cabronas y Chingonas, a podcast where we talk about queer and Latinx topics such as
the Women's World Cup. That shit is gay.
It really is. Like, honestly, that's like it's homophobic to not watch it.
During Pride Month of all months? That's the gayest shit ever. I love it. I stan.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I was living for the memes today of people being like, yeah, Yahweh, like, déjalos en paz, like, they were killing Thailand. The USA
13-0.
Was killing them. Ugh, somebody was like, Daniel from Functional put the Simpsons meme where they're like, stop, he's already dead.
Stop killing him, he's already dead or something, right?
Right, there you go, yeah. But in all seriousness, watch this shit. Especially, I know like it's on weird hours, but at least on the weekends, you know, the, like some early morning drinking, it's an excuse to drink in the morning. Just saying.
Yes, and the one time to like cheer on the USA as they do something.
As they finally do something successfully. Cabrona,
what's poppin', Chingona?
Yo, I'm tired as balls, but you know what? There's daylight out still, kind of, which is wild.
Dude, I finally have electricity. That's wild.
Let there be light, indeed.
Let there be light. True love, me and the electricity that I'm getting into my apartment. I can cook now, dude. Yo, that was fucking crazy.
I don't know how you did it.
No, I had to like go to my mom's house and charge my phone and come back and just be like, oh well, fuck it, here I am.
God.
Yeah, my mom was like, yeah, you can go now, and I was like, okay.
That is so wild.
Bye, mom.
Jeez.
Anyways, dude, it's the gayest month, the one month we're allowed to be gay.
It's the month where I'm allowed to be happy about it, and for some reason, I'm, like, sad as hell about being gay this month. Oh, God. But it's, like, I don't know. But I guess to me, like, it's okay, and me and you talked about this a little bit on our Patreon episode, where it's, like, for us, it's Pride year-long on this podcast. It's kind of Pride all the time. So when it comes to, like, June, we're not here sitting trying to do something special. In fact, today's episode is kind of, like, not Pridey at all, but...
No, yeah. but it's, like... the nature of two queers talking about things? Gay as fuck.
Right. So it's just, like, no, we're not really doing much, like... Well, we're going to try to do something special for Pride, right? We're going to try, but for the most part, it's who we are year long. So
yeah, I mean, 24/7 we're queer, but happy Pride to everyone else who's gonna buy their rainbow gear this month. You know what's fucked up is I'm literally wearing my Pride shirt right now, this very moment. So not on purpose, nice. Just because like it was clean and I didn't have laundry.
Well, I
couldn't do laundry.
I act like I don't like celebrate this thing, but I've been to like 20 bajillion Pride things. And I feel like I'm like meant to be at certain Pride things, like without even trying. Like I just wanted to go like grab a drink in West Hollywood, and there happened to be a parade there, and like a really really big one, freaking huge one. And I look up when I'm coming out of this bar, and what do I see but the bisexual flag float with none other than Penelope Alvarez and Sid and Todd, who's a Schneider, and I see them all on this float. I'm like, what is going on?
You're like, am I day drunk or is this happening?
It turns out it was both.
That
yeah,
I love that, dude. That's fucking amazing. I'm so jelly. You weren't even trying to do that. You were minding your fucking business.
No, I was just gonna go hang out with my friends.
That's lovely. That's a true LA fucking story. You're like, I was minding my business and I ran into celebrities. Like, that's just
ran into LA. this gay parade.
Parade.
Yeah. Whoopsie daisy.
I fucking love it. I guess like another thing to celebrate Pride, if you guys want, just like to learn the history of like maybe like a really sad moment in queer history. Like, there's a Frontline documentary on PBS. It's called We Were Here. It's kind of about, like, the AIDS epidemic in the 80s, how it affected the queer community. It's on PBS, it's on Frontline. You actually have to pay, but I recommend doing that because you're giving your coins to queer folks, so please do it. Oh, dude, for Pride, I finally found the Marsha P. Johnson and Sylvia Rivera, like, mural in Dallas.
Oh, yeah, yeah. At Havana?
Yes, it's on the side of Havana. Well, it's right next to, I think, the tattoo shop, but, you know, I call it Havana, you know, because it's the same shit.
Yeah.
But it's apparently one of the biggest murals of Marsha P. Johnson in the United States.
That's amazing. I wish I had gotten to see it, but
I'm
going
to take Val. She's coming this weekend to Dallas. I'm going to take her to the neighborhood, and we're going to go check out the Marsha P. Johnson mural.
Shout out, Val.
Shout out, Val. But yeah, so it's just super beautiful, and we have to remember our queer elders and what they went through to even be themselves. Also recommend Stone Butch Blues. It's actually like a free PDF. The author, forgive me, I forgot her name, but she actually wanted it to be free. She didn't want to charge other queer folk.
Amazing.
For her work. She said it should be free. It should be available to people without homes, people without money, people without labor, disabled community. Everyone should have access to this. And it's a free PDF, and her partner is actually the one still running it and giving it out for free. And you can go download it and read it and learn more about some queer history from a butch queer person who actually, I'm pretty sure, didn't identify. They were gender non-binary, I believe, at the end.
Word. Yeah, I mean, we forget that the terminology didn't really exist for a long time. People were things that they didn't know, that they didn't, that they couldn't just, you know, label.
Yeah, it's really beautiful. It's really hard, but something I think every like queer person should read to learn about their elders. But yeah, I saw a couple of tweets of yours about on Netflix. There's this new series called Tales of the City. Mm-hmm. It's written by by our non-fave Lauren Morelli. She also wrote for Orange is the New Black. She notoriously killed off Poussey, everyone's favorite character, her own wife, off of Orange is the New Black. So I think maybe that's why you're having some trouble getting into Tales of
the
City.
No, not at all. I didn't even know that. No. I just honestly didn't expect it to be so straight and so white.
Thank you.
Did not expect that. And actually, as you were talking about respecting our elders and what they went through for us to be here, it kind of reminded me of the first episode that actually caught my interest. I think it was episode 3 or episode 4, which whenever I tweeted about, mm-hmm. where they had that conversation that, you know, these like older white cis gay men kind of always have that, like, oh, you have no idea what we went through, and you're right, you guys went through it, like, you lost a lot of people, like, a lot of terrible things happened, but they're sitting there, a slight spoiler alert, telling a black man that he has no idea what it feels like to be, like, oppressed, ostracized this way. Mm-hmm. I'm like, are you fucking mad? I don't know. That was the first time that I was like, wow, this show is actually doing something. But I mean, the fact that it took 4 episodes for me to like feel anything for this show is a little... So Tales of the City was something we had in our rotation of like maybe talking about, but I think this might be the extent of it.
Yeah, I haven't gotten past, I think, maybe one more episode after that. It was very, like my homeboy Martin said, he's like, I tried it. It's just really white. And I was like, yeah.
And weirdly straight.
Yeah, a lot of, and then the Ellen Page thing, I didn't want that, you know. You know what I'm talking about there. If you guys watch it, you're not gonna want it either. You're gonna be like, no, that's happening. Why?
I'm pretty like whatever about that part of it. But yeah, so I haven't finished the series yet, right? So maybe I'll change my mind, but I don't think so. I think this might be all we're gonna say about Tales of the City. Unfortunately, we're gonna have to find something else to talk about.
Yeah. Oh, better things like Pose.
Oh yeah, Pose is back.
Season 2.
Pose came out 2 days ago, which is today for us. We haven't seen it yet. We're gonna see it.
Yes.
ASAP Rocky.
Yes. I mean, I already know I love it. It's supposed to take place in the 1990s, the year I was born. So I'm hype on it.
Word.
1990 was popping.
Wasn't born yet, but yeah.
Yeah, you're a baby. You were not even an idea yet. So you're.
I was like, I was a.
You were a dream.
But a dream, yeah.
We're old as fuck, and it's just hitting me.
Well, let's get into a little bit of what we're gonna be talking about, because we're already 10 minutes into this episode, so
yeah, it's fine.
Let's talk about the lady of the hour. Unless, do you have other things to talk about?
There is this new show. It's like a sci-fi show on Netflix. It's like not necessarily Latinx. There's really like a distinction between being Brazilian and being Latinx, and Brazilians made that distinction, but it is super fucking diverse, dude. Like, because, like, you know, Brazil is one of the most ethnically diverse, like, countries in the entire world. So to see the show actually reflect that in the casting is super fucking dope. And the fact that it's about classism.
What's the show called?
It's called 3% on Netflix.
Oh, that's been out for a bit, right?
Yeah. Season 3 came out just recently. I know Rosa loves it. I love it, and Joe love it. But yeah, it's actually like cast so fucking beautifully and realistically to what Brazil is. And I wish the United States could like copy at least casting people to look like the way society does. They do a really good job of that. And I just really shout out to their casting, because the leads are people of color. There is one white girl, but that's fine. Everybody else is a POC. So I'm into it. So it's good.
For sure.
Yeah, right, that's cool. That's it. I'm just really proud of their casting. It's just the nerdy thing I have to say about that.
Yeah. But yeah. I haven't gotten into it yet.
We haven't seen the other shit that's been out on HBO, Gentleman Jack. Sorry, guys. Maybe.
I don't know why I'm not like...
I know why. It's white, bro.
Yeah, like after I saw The Favorite, and then I saw like, what's the other one with the Keira Knightley...
I like that one.
Me too, but it's just kind of like it was an overload of like queer white ladies,
1800s
time period pieces, lesbians, or whatever. Yeah. I was like, that's I'm good. Moving on. So I don't know. Maybe I'll watch it. Maybe I won't. We'll see.
Yeah. I'm not gonna. Yeah. Anyways, sorry. Yeah. Let's get into it.
So there's this really amazing woman that we've talked about a few times who is really, really, really inspiring, and who it's accidentally an episode about her. We just kind of have two things that we want to talk about, and they relate to each other, and it's no surprise because they're both executive produced by Ava DuVernay.
Hey, and Maita has like a lot of like background info on her.
I have a little bit.
I like kind of just deep dove into like the subject, but like she's amazing. Like, if you guys watch anything that Ava DuVernay does, you're doing yourself a favor. She's probably one of the most interesting directors, I think, right now, period.
Yeah.
And one of the most brilliant storytellers, and using her art not just to like elevate like media, she's using it to elevate society, which is, I think, something that's like incredibly sometimes impossible, or sometimes, you know, directors just aren't able to do that, you know. And she's shifting culture, she's causing conversation. Like, people are out here legit like still Cardi B talked about the When They See Us miniseries on Netflix.
who isn't talking about When They See Us? Yeah,
it's amazing, dude. I just, everyone, the way she's touching society right now, I think that's like the true definition of like being a great artist. And she's more than a director, you know. She's like a true creator and artist. So I'm mind blown.
She's genuinely like a good person. She, on her show Queen Sugar, which mm-hmm. is doing tremendously. We've talked about this before. She hired all women writers, mm-hmm. directors. Sorry, not writers. Directors, including Aurora Guerrero, who we had on the show, and we talked about how uplifting other people, you know, who are. Who have to struggle in this industry, and how they uplift each other and how much that helps and stuff like that. So that's amazing. And yeah, so Queen Sugar is also featured like a queer woman of color, kind of. I've heard little rumors here and there.
Ooh, okay.
So there's that. She's also kind of had like kind of hit or misses, huh? Like, you know, there's
the Disney stuff.
Like, yeah, well, literally, even in this episode, we'll kind of talk about that, because obviously the hit, When They See Us, like, it's amazing, and then there's a bit of a miss where I think maybe it could have to do with her being less involved or whatever else, like maybe some sort of production missteps, I don't know, but, you know, generally, she's a very, like, like respected artist in her field. So, and it's well deserved. But what I noticed,
I mean, it's like the Disney stuff, you know. But she also made 13th, and that's an amazing documentary, also on Netflix, documenting what it means to be incarcerated in the United States, especially if you're a man of color or a person of color. Period. What that actually means. And then she's making a Prince documentary as well. So I think documentaries or anything with historical, like,
backgrounds. So, like, reality?
Yes, yeah. Just, like, the super, super fantastical Disney productions. I think those are the things that are kind of, like, there's a lot of hands in that stew, you know? Like, a lot.
When she something, does well.
The budget goes really, really high, I think there's just, you know, there's no way that you can have complete creative freedom or control. I'm not sure, though. I'm not sure. I wasn't there.
Yeah, these are all theories on our parts.
Yes.
But one thing that I noticed is she's like a woman of firsts. Ava DuVernay, the first Black woman to win the directing award in the U.S. dramatic competition of, like, Sundance in 2012. Mm. First Black woman director to be nominated for a Golden Globe. First Black woman director to be nominated for the Academy Award for Best Picture. Those were for the last two were for Selma. And she's also, like, the first Black woman that directed a film that earned over $100 million domestically, like, period. Even though, in general, I would say that that movie was a flop. But $100 million, like, fuck.
Yeah, I mean, still, she's allowed to, like, make a movie that's worth $100 million. Like, what the fuck? Like, that's... And it's kind of sad that, like, she's one of the first, too. Like, it's great, but then it's like, fuck, what's going on?
Yeah. I mean, we know what's going on.
Yeah, we do. Of course I know.
She grew up in Linwood, California. People, like, to place it, they have to say, like, oh, it's right near Compton. And it sure is. It's actually really, really close to Hawthorne, where I used to live when I first moved to California. And I used to pass by Linwood all the time. So to me, I was like, oh my gosh, she used to be right there. I used to be right there, too. She went to UCLA. She double majored in English and then African American studies. So, you know, she kind of, she's also very inspiring to a lot of people because she didn't just, like, hop into film and work her way up type of thing. Like, she did a lot of stuff really well before she got into her film career. She was in journalism for a long time. She literally covered, like, some wild ass things during her time in journalism. And then she went into PR, and, like, as you were looking through a list of stuff that she did PR for, she had her own PR company, and she did, like I said, super successful woman in all her ventures and everything.
Y'all, she did Shrek 3, like, for the PR for Shrek 3, Rush Hour, okay? Like, she did everything you didn't know, she done did the PR for it. I was amazed, dude.
Definitely.
Mind blown.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't until 2005 that she delved into film, and it literally started with, like, a $6,000 movie that I think might have been self-funded, and the rest is history. Like, she's done so many amazing things since then. Ever since then, it's, like, literally just straight shot upwards. I feel like she's a woman, I'm probably wrong about this, but to me, I see her, and I'm like, this is a woman who has not failed. Like, she set her mind on something, and she's got in it, you know? So, yeah. I respect her so much, and she's amazing.
I think she probably was never, like, allowed to fail, you know? She has that, you have to be perfect, you know? If you're going to be put in these places, you have to be perfect, and she has been. And I think
maybe,
just, you know, I feel like she's had to be perfect, and she's stepped up every time to do it, and
I feel like she's stepped up to do, like, what she wants to do, for sure. I think that she's just a very motivated person.
Oh, yeah. She's, like, goals in every sense. Like, and not just that. Like, fun fact. I don't know if you knew this, but I'm pretty sure Dee Reese, the director from Pariah, we love, another queer Black woman. I'm pretty sure she maybe...
Not another queer Black woman. We're not going to...
Oh, no. My bad. I'm not, like, Ava, in comparison to, like, of. Ava. Yeah, yeah. I'm talking about, like, you know...
In general.
Yeah, in general, she's a queer Black woman making movies, and it's... Okay, no, not saying that. I don't know that.
We don't know. We don't think so, but we don't know.
I don't, we're not claiming that because people self-identify. Anyways, I'm talking about Dee Reese. I'm pretty sure she worked underneath her at some point with Ava. I'm pretty sure there's a connection there between Ava and Dee Reese. She even had one of the, well, I'll get into that later, but I'm pretty sure that she also like shone a light on Dee Reese. I think she got to like direct one of the episodes on Queen Sugar as well.
And, did she really? Mm-hmm. I have no idea.
There's a connection there.
I'll put it on you to find that link and put it on gaotanazichingones.com.
Okay, cool. All right. But maybe. I'm not sure. I'm making that connection myself because somewhere along the lines, I feel like they're connected. Like maybe she like PA'd for her a little.
Right. it's a stretch, but okay.
It's a stretch.
let's get into our topics then. Cool. I don't know which one. Should we save the best for last?
Both jump in at the end because we, you know, but Red Line I haven't seen, so I'm kind of interested.
For sure. Okay, then I'll tell you about the Red Line. These were both kind of covering somewhat limited series, TV series type of things. They're a little funky, like a little not exactly like regular television. The one that I'm covering is The Red Line, and that was executive produced by Ava DuVernay as well as Greg Berlanti, both very well known in the TV world, and it was written and created by Erica Weiss and Caitlin Parrish. I think they're fairly new to the game. They don't have a whole lot of credits, to put it nicely, I guess. I don't know a whole lot about them. The Red Line, the name refers to the train line in Chicago, and which to me was disappointing to realize, because I thought that they were going to tackle redlining, you know? That's what I thought this whole damn thing was about. Like, you make it about race and you call it the Red Line, but you don't make it about redlining, I guess.
You're like, that was a missed opportunity.
Maybe it got cut in post off. What the fuck happened? I don't know, but... Just Google redlining, guys. It's probably disproportionately affecting a POC near you. So look that up. I guess speaking of what I thought it would tackle, redlining, gentrification, racism, police brutality. What it actually tackled was white privilege, grieving for loved ones, and some police officer who's played by Mickey from Shameless.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So to me, I guess like it did cover important things, but not what I thought it was going to cover. And I guess I got left with a little bit of like whiplash. I don't know. I'll get into the plot a little bit. It follows the lives of like three different families, but mainly just one, the Calder Brennans. And that's a family of two dads, one white and one black, who, the black guy, of course, is killed by an officer. And so left behind is the white dad and their adopted daughter, who's black. And after being left with just a white dad, like, she's kind of feeling the need to find her birth parents, because she wants somebody who's going to understand how she's feeling, like, as a black person in society. And she's lost her father, who would understand that and who was literally, like, you know, got the worst of it. And she's just, like, feeling like shit. So, honestly, I thought from the trailer, I was kind of really excited about this character because I thought that she was going to be, like, queer. I feel like they insinuated that in a trailer and then they just kind of never went anywhere with it. But at most, I think we can recognize her as a really strong ally. She, like, to her parents, and she has a non-binary BFF. Yeah, I wish that there was more to say about her really cool BFF. She has a couple of them, but they were super sidelined and really two-dimensional characters. Like, really quite literally there. Like, they said it verbally in the dialogue. Like, they're just her support system. They're not much else, which is a bummer. The other family, or one of the other families, is the Youngs, which consists of a black woman who is trying to unseat somebody from office who's been there for a long time. He's a black man, because she thinks that he's become complacent. Like, yeah, like, he was making a big change and, like, making waves and stuff back in his day, but, like, now he's not really doing much to help Chicago and the people that are oppressed there. So, yeah, I'm not going to say much more regarding that family because spoilers, but I'll say that it was almost interesting.
Almost.
Almost interesting.
Oh, no. Yeah. That's not good.
Yeah, the like, third family. Yeah. The third family was the family of the white, dysfunctional, racist, police military family. Oh, that was the Texans. Evans. Texans. Yeah, but they were Irish, so I guess that was a twist on it. They spent a lot of time trying to show like how complex they were and like all this internal trauma that the guy, the officer that shot, you know, the girl's dad, let he felt and blah blah blah. And I feel like they really almost did something by outing them as like these racists and these like assholes. But at the end of it, like, I was pretty annoyed. They had like this mystical Latino character that comes into his life. He's a police officer too. And they have literally like the most cheesy lines where they're like, he's talking in Spanish to like his wife and he's like, I have to see what it's in this officer's heart, like, you know, before he before he decides, like, oh, yeah. No, it was bad. Like in Spanish, like, tengo que ver que están su corazón. Like, dude.
Like, so he's much more dramatic.
Yeah. And it was like, it didn't fit. It didn't fit in the show.
You're like, when this turned into like a pinche novela, like, what?
Straight up. And like, he's supposed to be like this like magical Latino, like, person of color in this white guy's life, who's there to like test his morality and make him see what he's been doing wrong and that he's racist all along, like, because that's our job, like, that's the job of, like, I don't know, it was really annoying. And he was once again another two-dimensional character that was just kind of there.
He was just there to serve the white character.
Yeah, to move his story along. So it was a little bit bothersome as well. The series, like, it was always meant to be a limited series, which is why it bothered me so much that it didn't work. Like, I would understand, like, if they were thinking that they're gonna have like 8 seasons to figure this stuff out and to flesh it all out, that's one thing. But they knew it was a limited series, which CBS decided to limit it even more and called it quits on season 1. So they had to wrap it up real quick.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah, you can actually watch it for free on CBS. And it's eight episodes, but they released them like 2 at a time. So it's grouped. So like, it's 4 different videos with 2 episodes together. So it's like 1.5 hours each one. So I kind of watched it that way, like 1.5 hours each time. It was kind of weird. Yeah, I don't know. It didn't do well. It was watchable for me because I was interested in like seeing where it went, but it was also generally technically a failure. Obviously it got canceled, so I don't know.
Damn.
But like I said, it did try really hard to tackle some of the subjects that I think like a lot of Twitter people are wanting to see, like us. Like, hey,
don't bunch us into that.
That's what we are. Just a little bit.
Sometimes we can get a little Twitter.
A little Twittery.
And then we're happy and then we're positive. So then not really. No. Oh, dude, did you hear our fave directed one of the episodes?
Our fave?
Yeah.
Aurora. Over the Red Line?
Yeah, she directed an episode of the Red Line.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Did I know that? I don't know if I knew that. I mean, like, she like, it was shot well, you know what I mean? Like, so most of the actors did well. Like, very technically speaking, there's a lot of really good things about, like, the show. So I'm not putting this on...
Oh, no.
Not even writers and not the directors. Honestly, I think this is kind of just, like, a general, like, overarching fuck up. I don't know how else to say it. Like, the content wasn't doing it for me. But yeah, like, they did tackle like white privilege and corruption and like politicians and queer people who are black, Muslim, non-binary, you know, they had like a variety of that. And that's due to the writer's room and to the producers. Like, plus I saw one of the writers speak at a panel a while back and I really loved her energy. She was really awesome. Chernold Edwards. She's amazing. And I'm sure she's a great writer. Like I said, I just can't blame.
Some things like hit and some things just don't, you know?
Some things
like,
miss.
You know? And it's not really anyone's fault. It's just kind of like, you kind of have to maybe go through this to make something really beautiful after this. So hopefully everyone's going on to make something beautiful. Hopefully. I really hope.
I hope so. I hope that the writers get to go on and take this as a good thing, even though I know that, like, sometimes it doesn't look great for writers whenever you're on a show that only lasts a season. So,
yeah. But I really hope they all just find opportunity after this and make
the... At least they made the connections. And, I mean, working on a show produced by Avery DuVernay is not a bad thing.
No. Not at all.
Yeah.
They got this. I really believe in them. They can do it.
I think so.
They can pull through.
I think... You know, the heart is there. But at the end of the day, like, it wasn't near as powerful or as emotional as When They See Us. Like, after all, this was a show that was written and created by somebody. Like, life is stranger than, darker and more heartbreaking than fiction will ever be.
Oh, God. Yes. I mean, if you want to get into it, we can start.
We should probably get into it.
Yeah. Cool. So we're also going to be covering, as you just heard, When They See Us. It just came out on Netflix. Ava DuVernay directed and co-wrote this. I'm going to give their co-writers their credit because they never do. It's going to be, I believe, Attica Locke, Robin Swycord, and Michael Starbury. Shout out to all of them. They co-wrote this amazing, beautiful miniseries. Well, miniseries isn't the right word for it, right? It's a...
Or, like, limited series.
Limited series. It's a four-part, hour-long episodes. There might be a better word for it, on Netflix. And it's covering, if you don't know, about the Central Park Five. They were five innocent teenage boys in New York City that were caught up, coerced into giving fake testimonies, beaten by cops, and served... I think each between, 12 to 14 years in prison. One of them went to Rikers at the age of 16 and was basically alone until he got out in, I believe, 2002. Shout out to them. Let me give them their names right now. It's because it's really important that we know their names, that we remember their names. So
Corey.
That this. Corey. Oh my
Corey.
God. Episode 4 of this miniseries will break you. And I recommend taking breaks as much as and as often as you need to. Shout out, we're gonna tell the names of the five black men affected and the five victims, other than the jogger that night. It was Kevin Richardson, Anton McRae, Yusuf Salam, Corey Wise, love you, and Raymond Santana. They were all little kids walking through the park, and not even all of them were. Corey Wise was nowhere near. Well, he wasn't even supposed to have been picked up by the cops. He wasn't on a list, supposedly. But all of them were victims to systematic oppression, police brutality.
Racism. Straight up white supremacy. Yeah.
Straight up white supremacy. everything. This limited series on Netflix is super important. And it's actually not even the only one. To her credit, Ava DuVernay did credit... another documentary that was made, let's get the name really quick. Sarah Burns and Ken Burns made a documentary in 2012. That's how I heard about the Central Park Five. It came out on PBS. They did a whole documentary on it. And I had heard about it before, but I didn't know until I saw that documentary in 2012. So if you guys have the opportunity, you just want to watch a documentary that isn't going to really...
Instead of a dramatized version,
yes,
right?
Exactly. If you just want a documentary style first, I'd say revisit that. And if you haven't, I say it's worth watching, worth giving your money to Ken and Sarah Burns. They're amazing documentarians. They make everything. I'd watch that first or second, whatever. now, watching this and watching that detective, there was a detective... who was using literally everything in her little handbook of racism to get them the fuck out of there. It's Detective Linda Fairstein. Fuck you, bitch, forever. to this day, she maintains the Central Park Five did this crime because, duh, she has to stand by her load of bullshit. The
fucking
even
audacity.
Right? Even though she can smell her own fucking shit, she's still standing by it. But luckily, as of today, that bitch done been lost her publishing deal. That bitch had to step down from her stupid little nonprofit organization, and everyone and anyone that had ties with her is cutting them. But literally, they're only doing it because this fucking documentary, this fucking movie, this limited series got popping on Netflix, and everybody knows who this bitch is now. So now they're covering their own asses by firing or getting rid of their association to a racist ass, Miss Linda fucking Fairstein. Fuck you, bitch. Find me. Come find me. Anyways. And you're going to feel like that. I mean, anyone that's watched that, did you feel like this?
The whole first episode, like, it's kind of split up into episodes, right? Like, the first episode is, like, anger. It's just pure, like, hatred for the system. It's just, like, feeling, you know, just horrible. And I don't say that in, like, a, oh, my God, this is terrible. I'm saying, like, this makes you feel a lot because this, you should be feeling this a lot. You should be, you know, feeling the story. That's good storytelling. This is a story that's supposed to make you feel this way. You shouldn't dilute it, and they didn't dilute it, and it's beautiful.
Yeah, because like the first episode, what you're seeing is all of the kids be kids. They're just living their lives in a very normal way. I think everyone can relate to just being a little kid or just getting out of school, hanging out with your friends, going to the park, going to run around, be loud. And it didn't really work out for any of them the way that they were just minding their business. And just be policed to be a black person, I can't imagine it, you know? And it's something we all take for granted every day when we walk around in the world and exist as, you know, light-skinned folk, you know? It's something that we have to remember and keep in mind and try to be allies as much as possible to anyone else that's going to actually get the shit beat out of them by the whole fucking system. And to say that we haven't benefited from our own privilege, like as being like light-skinned people in the world, like it's fucking crazy.
Absolutely.
So watching episode one just made you just humanize literally these little kids. And the thing is, as the episodes go on, you're seeing how the police coerced these fake-ass confessions that none of them actually confessed to doing the crime. All of them just said that they were involved, and they didn't really even know why or how. What you're seeing as well is an amazing, amazing performance by all of these kids. Like, the kid actors in this fucking miniseries are literally amazing. And the one character that stayed consistent, he both played the younger version and the older version of himself, was we got to shout out him because he's been in literally everything.
Corey Wise, the one that played Corey Wise, like, honestly, I was so shook because of the versatility, obviously the people in wardrobe and makeup and hair, like, they did an amazing job with him. Absolutely fantastic actor. Like, you felt his you just felt everything that he was feeling, you know? Like, I don't know how to describe it. I don't have good words right
his
now.
His fear, the way that he made facial expressions, like, Jarrell Jerome really fucking owned his place as both, you know, young Corey Wise and older Corey Wise. You see the development and him being, you know, happy. And then as it goes on, like, wow, like, you're seeing crazy performances from not just the children. There's one adult performance that I thought was insane. It was by Michael K. Williams. He played, I believe, Anton's father, the young athlete. I can't remember his name, but he said something really interesting and really, really fucking heartbreaking. I do want to read it just because I think it's beautiful, and I think we need to keep it in mind as we deal with the world. It's when the police want what they want, they will do anything. Do you hear me? Anything. They will lie on us, they will lock us up, and they will kill us. And I was like, fuck.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Dude, that scene where, I mean, okay, so not to get too personal, but like, dude, it's so easy to get coerced into like writing a statement because when you're like a little kid, like, you just getting coerced is so fucking easy. Like, they were, they knew exactly what they were doing.
There's a reason that there's laws where, you know, if you're a minor, you're supposed to have a parent, and they disregarded all these laws and worked their way around them and did all this really shady shit with these kids because they didn't see them as kids. They didn't see them as innocents. Like, it's truly horrific. Like, yeah, an adult can be coerced. Like, there's a whole documentary series on Netflix where whole-ass, grown-ass adults are coerced into giving false confessions. Like, this is a tactic that I think they even mentioned in When They See Us that they outlawed because it was ineffective. It was not, like producing correct, like, or, like, actual good confessions.
Yeah, it was, like, ethically and morally wrong. Like, and they knew it, and they just kept right on doing it until someone said, oh, well, that's not working, bro. So let's try something else. Let's not beat them into confessions anymore. And another fun fact is police are legally allowed to lie to you guys. So just keep that in mind. Don't ever say shit to cops, ever. Don't even say hello to motherfuckers because they are legally allowed to lie to you.
Like, yeah. It's, absolutely, they 100%. Can fucking
100% lie to you. Everything they say, if it's not, like, if you can't read a document, don't sign it, y'all. Just know your right shit. Do not, they, if they don't have a cause for suspicion to stop you, they cannot stop you. They cannot detain you. You can always ask, am I free to go? And you are free to go, boo. Because if you're minding your business walking down the street, they aren't allowed to ask you shit. They aren't allowed to fucking touch you. And you
don't have to answer shit, too. You can just keep
right on walking.
Yeah, right to remain silent, like, straight, it's straight up there. I don't know. And yep. Then yeah, it's just horrific.
If they have something on you, they'll arrest you. If they have right. something on you,
they're not gonna sit there and, like, give you a minute. Like, no, like, they're not gonna arrest you.
Mm-hmm. If so they have evidence shit. they don't need to coerce you. They already have evidence. They don't need shit.
But right, exactly.
And it's, I think this is a really important movie to watch with, like, younger kids so that you can introduce them into the idea of how to deal with systematic oppression in reality. You know, it's like, this is how it really will be and can be. So you just have to watch your back. And I think a really important thing to do is to maybe watch this with a younger kid and explain it to them. Or I think at any age, anyone should watch this so they can learn how to deal with the police, especially for POC. I think people of color... black and Latino black and Latino folk really need to, like, watch this, kind of learn, because we do have rights. We are allowed to remain silent. We're allowed to have an attorney, and you know you can just sit there and ask for one. You know, if they beat you, that's super legal. And you know, you gotta find a different way out of this systematic motherfucking oppression, because it's so fucking real.
I mean, it's not like they're gonna play fair, so it's kind of hard to give advice with these kind of things.
Yeah,
they're not gonna play fair. They're gonna, you know, like, these motherfuckers, like, have been outed with, like, literally, like, they'll turn off their body cams and start beating the shit out of you. Like, this isn't uncommon. Like, we can't exactly be like, oh yeah, as long as you follow these rules, you'll be okay. That's not the case for a lot of people, but nevertheless, like, you know. I wouldn't want to give the police what they want if I were ever in that position, which I wouldn't be, because I have a fucking ton of privilege in that space. But
dude, it's super scary. Like, I actually have written a statement to the police about myself, and it did feel coerced. I was, I think, about 16, and my mom was not present. The only thing that happened at the time was that it would have probably been a felony if the cop felt like it, but the cop ripped up the document, was like, you were honest with me. She was a black woman. I don't know if that maybe that helped the person that was dealing with me. She, like, tore up the statement. She's like, I'm not going to do anything. I'm going to pretend that this didn't happen, and we're just going to let this go. And had I gotten maybe someone else that day, it might not have. Yeah. I wouldn't probably be here right now, to be honest. There's a lot of things happening that day.
Yeah.
I just got lucky, dude. Like, and it's mm-hmm. really easy to get coerced at the age 16 to sign some document. Like, I was so scared. I had no idea what was going on. She was just like, here, write this, and I'll sign this. And I was like, huh? Okay. Like, sure, you're a cop. You wouldn't lie to me. And I was 16-year-old, and I was so fucking stupid. And I think she just took pity on me, and she just ripped up my statement. I just got lucky. It was really, really scary thing to think about now, where I'm like, fuck, like, this would not be my life. It'd be very, very different right now. So,
right.
I think it's really important that teenagers see this, because, like, it's super easy for that to happen to kids. And it did happen to me. So not like that. Not like that. No way. I got lucky. But it can happen. It's a real thing. So traumatic. So fucking traumatic. And guys, if you need to take breaks during this, I do recommend it. I didn't watch it straight through. Did you? Did you watch it, like, binge?
I watched it. I couldn't stop. Like, I don't know.
It's good.
It's an amazing thing, and I just think that, I don't know, it really got to me. And then, you know, I think it was, you know me, I like to watch horror films. I like to watch a lot of things that a lot of people can't stand watching sometimes. And for me, I couldn't take my eyes off of it. And then by the time that we really dive into Corey Wise's story, I was bawling like a baby. I was absolutely torn apart because, God, this is what I was talking about with Redline. Like, they're so two-dimensional with Corey Wise. Like, Corey Wise, he's like he's a real person, and they portrayed him as such. And it was like, so, like, there was so much humanity in him. Like, I don't know, like, I related to so many things that I didn't think I would relate to. Like, there's nothing in the story that I should be relating to, but I did. I absolutely did. I was sitting there, like, thinking about how, or, like, watching Corey have so much hope. And, you know, he, because of not telling the truth, because of being coerced into saying something that wasn't true, he ended up in this terrible situation. So then he refused to do it again. And that was amazing. And then he had these hopes of, like, how his life would have gone, and he would imagine it. And then he the way that he felt about his sister. And
oh, God. Oh, no. Oh,
there,
my
you
God.
Know, there's a part of it, you know, in his real life, Corey Wise had a trans sister who he loved. And so they brought that in, and that really tore me apart. So it was just so much about Corey's story that really, really got to me. And it's so beautiful and worth sticking around for that fourth episode to watch.
Dude, and the fact that, like, even after they were released, it took them until, I believe, 20 fucking I think I'm I don't want to mix up the dates.
Well, I mean, Corey didn't get released until, like,
2002.
Yeah, 2002,
because they found the actual person that did,
because he admitted it, right?
He admitted it, not because
they didn't,
like,
even, not because
the police
did
their job,
right?
The police did not do their motherfucking job.
Not
he just
one
was
minute.
Like, hey, you shouldn't do a bid for me, bro. I did it. Like, what?
Like a literal serial killer had more heart and empathy than,
bruh,
the police to
serial
do the right thing.
Murder rapist had more heart than a fucking that I don't know what that says.
I don't know what that says either. It, like, really fucking tears me up. Like, I don't know what to think about it, but yeah, it's just, it's tough, and it's crazy that anybody can argue that they were responsible at all in any way, shape, or form.
Dude, and to split $41 million between five people, and then, like, attorney fees and all this other shit, that's, like, nothing at the end of the day. That's nothing.
And Corey Wise and many other, they went on to do such amazing things with their money. Like, Corey's foundation to release wrongfully convicted people. Like, what?
That's dope as fuck.
Yeah, what amazing men. Like, I hope that they get mad bank from when they see us.
I do too. And to use their money for that? Like, how many people are, like, that rich, Beyonce, and don't do that? Like,
I would probably be more like Jay-Z, but yeah, I get it. Yeah, absolutely.
Him too. Both of them have a lot more money
now
than Corey Wise does. Lots
yeah.
more money than Corey Wise.
And not that they don't do good things with
they
their money.
They do amazing
sure
things.
That
they do amazing things.
But
I'm not saying they don't do amazing things.
But, you know,
they
could
do
more amazing things. Like,
that, like, the cat, you know, who needs a $100 million home? That's
who
gross.
Needs $1 billion? Nobody needs $1 billion.
And to get to
not
a billion,
even
you're probably a gross, you did some gross things to people, and let's not even pretend like capitalism is the end all be all. Like,
yeah.
it's not honey, it's gross. And to own that $100 million home, disgusting. Don't do that when, like, literally you can do anything else with your money. Anyways,
God. Not to veer off into a tangent,
but
yeah. We did.
Anyways,
so
ooh, capitalism. Anyways, it always comes in here. And, you know, another weird thing that is still to this day, like, a strange thing to me, the actual jogger, the actual victim of the crime, Melly, she won't talk to anyone that is actually believes that, you know, the Central by Five are innocent, that we know they're innocent. She still stands by that the NYPD did their job correctly the first time. Like, okay,
She stated that, like, she said, like, oh no, I don't think
yes,
that they're innocent.
She stated that she agreed with NYPD, and she still thinks they had involvement in it.
Well, you know what, she obviously had a lot
she
of brain trauma, so I'm just not even gonna acknowledge any of that.
Yeah, she had actual brain trauma, so let's let her
yeah,
be.
Yeah, she had
but
literal brain trauma, so
and
I'm
she
very
actually
sorry
is
for what you
not, other than them, she was a brutal victim as well. Like, no one really won here.
Yeah, like
everyone was a victim to something, you know? So it's not like she was out here, but she's still to this day just I don't know. I'm gonna let her live because she's able to, so good for her, but there's actual proof that they didn't. DNA proof that they did not do it. But go off, sis. Whatever gets you through, because your life fucked up.
Sorry about it.
Yeah. Yo. But yeah, let's. I mean, we didn't talk about this, but how many cafecitos would you give the red line?
I would give it a solid cafecito and a half per episode. I guess, ooh, you know, there were some episodes where I was like, okay, one cafecito. And then, like, towards the end, the last episode, I'd be like, fuck, dude, like, no. This is just not doing it. Like, this was wrapping it up real quick and kind of sad, but yeah.
Damn. How many cafecitos would you give When They See Us?
Zippity doodah. It's such amazing. Like, I was just sitting there, like, I didn't eat for hours. It was like 2 p.m. before I knew it, and I was just kind of like depressed. And I was like, this is amazing. This is the most amazing thing I've seen in such a long time.
I mean, the reason I stopped it is because it was 3 a.m. and I didn't realize I had watched the first three episodes in a sitting. And I was like, I should sleep before it's 5 a.m. and then I can't sleep again because I'm thinking about this. Like, I just need to sleep. But yeah, same. I give it 5 panduces. I think it's up there. Maybe it's her masterpiece. And I think if this is her masterpiece, she's really fucking amazing. Because I hope she makes more things that are just on this level. But seriously, I the way it's hitting society, the way people are reacting to it, I think it's beautiful and amazing. And I just want her to make as many things as she can. And she is such a great person. She really uses her power, I think, the same way that Lena Waithe does. Is that anytime she's given an opportunity, she shines a light on someone else. And she says, if I'm coming, you're all coming with me. And I think the world needs more people like that, and we need more anything that Ava DuVernay does.
Yeah, so. Even The Red Line, which, though was a miss, I still think was a good try. You know, like, yeah, it's still, you know, there's always these things that, like, have a technical failure, but they set precedent for, like, future things, and I think that's something that's worthy.
It is worthy, so shout out to that, you know? So good, so good. So, you guys, whatever you're doing, go watch some Ava DuVernay. Go make your little cousins that are, like, 12 years old watch this with them and explain to them what's going on and let them know cops can and will lie to you. And just, you know, take that whole thing as, like, a know your rights lesson.
Right, and to the most extreme. Know, continue your education. Like, there's a lot to be learned. There's history to be learned. There's redlining. There's police brutality still exists to this day. Like,
oh yeah, it didn't. So. I mean, what we saw in that limited series is literally the reality of so many people to this day. So,
yeah,
just keep it in mind as you move forward in life. You know, so
let's try to prosper and do well and stay away from cops. No cops at Pride, even though there's a fuck ton of Pride. There's so many cops at Pride, dude. So there's so many. It's disgusting.
It's so gross. Didn't feel better for it. I was like, y'all need to go too, please. This ain't.
Girls, get out of here. Like, who is doing anything to anybody? You go hang out with the anti-gays over there in the corner. Just go stand there.
Where you belong with the anti-gays. Yeah. Bye. is there any announcements you want to make?
Announcement. Grownish is back, I guess. I was watching that a little bit.
I guess. I love that. Oh, dude. News for you. I listen to you like I always do. I watch Fleabag because of you, and I really like it.
Yeah. Fucking good, right? Did you watch both seasons?
I am almost finished with season 2. I just started season 2 because it's kind of like been on the back burner because I have to watch everything else. Yeah. It's really fucking good and also very straight. I have to fast forward a lot of scenes because I'm like, I don't care.
It's
pretty
straight, yeah.
Straight sex scenes. I would just kind of
like start texting during those scenes. I'd be like, let me write back to some people.
No, I'd be like fast forwarding and I'm like, oh no. When it's oh no, because then on my TV it still shows what's happening and I'm like, no, I don't want this. But I mean, it's very well written, and it's yeah, you're right. It is kind of like hard to watch too, because it's just kind of like, this is kind of depressing. Yeah, but it's very well written.
It's a great. It's yeah, Phoebe Waller-Bridge. That bitch got talent.
She's very tall.
So we have a little bit of time. Do you want to do like some Patreon shoutouts?
Yeah, for sure. I'm down. Let's do it. We haven't done it in a while. We haven't shouted.
Yeah, we just do it at such a random time. So I figure let's just do it. All right, homie. I'm gonna let you start with these awesome, amazing. Oh, actually, before everybody tunes out to hear our Patreon shoutouts, go follow us at CYC Podcast on Instagram and Twitter, where we post all kinds of cool updates on events, locally and not locally. Blah blah blah. My personal is MYTE Panda.
My personal is at Fried Papita.
And of course, we'll put up links at cabronesychingones.com at some point. I don't know. If we don't get to it right away, just DM us. We'll let you know what's good. Yes. And yeah, go to our Patreon if you want to become a Patreon supporter. Every fourth week that we don't post on our regular feed, we'll be posting there. It's patreon.com/CYC podcast. It starts at $1 if you want to just do $1. Like, you'll get a shout out. And yeah, so see us there. And moving on now to our lovely, lovely patrons. I love all of you so much. All right, you go first before I cry. Okay.
Yay. So at our Arcoiris level, shout out to Denzel. Love you. He's back. Aaron, I love you. I haven't seen you in a while, but I love you. Glow is in the other room studying. I love you too. Chrissy, oh my God, what's up, girl? If you haven't seen her pins, they're fucking amazing.
Oh my God, yes, the gay aunt one.
Yes, dude, I posted it, and I everyone was like, I have to get this. And I was like, yes, you should. I'm
still super stoked on my Thea Bitchy pin that she gave us.
I still wear it all the time. I try not to wear it like in public too much because I don't want to lose it.
Right, I'm terrified of that. Go on.
Yes, shout out to Raciel. I haven't seen you in a while, but I love you. Your selfies every day. I feel like I learn something new about color every day that you post a new selfie. They're just really beautiful. shout out to Jake. And if you guys haven't seen, if you haven't heard Jake's podcast, it's called Juice with Jake and Jake. We'll attach links. They're amazing. I really fucking love them. He's a Scorpio. Makes sense. Shout out to Vicky. What's up, girl? Mother favorite Scorpio. Just so many Scorpios. Shout out to Rosauda. She's a filmmaker, and her fucking like outfits are on point every single day. They're amazing. Shout out to my brother Bethel. Thank you for supporting.
My brother Bethel.
Shout out to our brother Bethel. Shout out to Manimar. What's good, girl?
The OG.
I see you out here living. She's just such good energy. We love you. Like, you're the best. I'm done with my people.
Word. So one more Arcoiris level supporter, Alejandra Navarez. You're the best. Feel free to reach out anytime. I don't think we've actually spoken very much, but I would love to. We would both love to. And yes. On the Chingona level or the Cabecito level is Kristen. Thank you for supporting for another month. Truly appreciate it. Also feel free to reach out anytime. The ones that I have talked to, Alicia, super OG. I love hearing from you. Like, she always leaves comments on our stuff in like the middle of the night when we're sleeping because she's on Australia time. Yeah. And I'm always wake up and I'm like, yes, Alicia, come through. Michelle Sutton, you're also here for another month. You're one of our newer ones. Feel free to reach out anytime. I love chatting with you guys. Like, I feel like I used to talk to you guys more, and now there's so many of you. Noelle, you're the best. You're sweetheart. Like, whenever I post depressing stuff on Twitter, which has been happening lately, you're all like, I'm here for you. And I'm like, wow.
She sends the best, like, little, like, hug things, hug gifs. They're the best. She's the best.
Yes, Elisa, thank you for supporting another month, and Elena, you're the best. I see you biking around for charity. Yo, you're doing the damn thing.
Dude, that's goals.
Yeah.
I'm like, how do you do that? It's amazing. Like, I just want to be fit to do cool stuff like her. Honestly, this is so dope.
Honestly, would love to be fit one day.
Just to do cool stuff like that. Like, no other reason. Like, I don't want to be fit for any other reason.
Right.
Pick up things, pick up heavy things. That's it. Like,
go up the stairs with all the groceries at once type of shit, yeah.
Yo. And not be tired at the top like I am.
Yeah, exactly. So thank you guys all for another month of supporting and for voting whenever I want to know what you want to hear on Patreon. You know, you get to choose. If you ever have suggestions, feel free to reach out. We always aim to please, you know, for the people who pay for our website and pay for our hosting site and for stickers that we give out to people. And speaking of stickers, for those of you stuck around, if you want a sticker, leave us a review on iTunes. Or if you don't want a sticker and you want to leave us a review on iTunes anyways, because that really helps us for free, then you can do that free.
Yes, five stars.
For $0 it'll cost you.
It costs $3.99 to leave us a review and for 5 stars.
And it does a lot for us, like so much. Also tell a friend for Pride. Be like, oh, you want to celebrate Pride? Listen to CYC.
Tell everyone about it. It's free to tell your other queer friends that some queer girls are making some shit by themselves.
Or your Latinx friends or non-binary or whatever.
Anyone. If they're dope, they're dope. You know, just, you know, your neighborhood.
Or if you just have taste. If you have taste at all in film and television, like, you could be straight and white and still figure it out, man. Like, just whatever.
Yeah. Like, if you have taste, you have taste. You can't help it, right? Like, it is what it is.
The flavor.
The flavor. It reminds me of California Love 84.
Love her. I haven't seen her latest video. I feel like a fake fan.
Dude,
fake,
what are you doing? Fan. Go do this after
I'm
this.
So busy. I'm so busy, dude.
Do it while you're like in the toilet. Just watch her. That's what I
work. I work more than I don't. So there's that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
We should do it. Make you happy at some point. But yeah.
I know.
So I'll thank you guys.
Thanks for supporting. You guys are the best. We'll see you, hear you next. I don't know what's coming for you next week. We have nothing planned for next
idea.
Week. And we have to record this in like 3 or 4 days. Like, I don't know. We should probably hang up this recording and figure that out. Actually,
yeah,
so bye, guys. Thank you for supporting. Yeah, bye.